From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. From an economic standpoint, 2016 was very good to the Granite State. That's at least the conclusion of New Hampshire Business Review in its just-published year-end edition. The paper points to very low state unemployment. Bankruptcy filings continue to slide, and impressive increases in business tax revenues. But there's another side to some of these numbers. For example, rock-bottom unemployment masks the struggles of two groups, those Granite Staters working low-wage or part-time jobs, and those employers who can't fill empty positions. Today in The Exchange, a special year-in-review edition of our Economic News Roundup, and let's hear from you. How would you rate 2016 from an economic standpoint? What's your own economic forecast for 2017? Again, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our guests are Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Steve, welcome.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Jeff Feingold, Editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me, Laura.
And also with us, Russ Thibault, President of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm in Laconia. And Russ, welcome. Good to see you.
Thanks. Good
well,
to be here.
Russ, let's just start with you before we jump into this 2016 review that Jeff's group did and a 2017 forecast that Steve's group did. What are some of the most recent economic headlines that you've been looking at, Russ?
Well, I think, Laura, really it's fair to say there's just a blizzard of good numbers out there this time of year. It's kind of season appropriate. If you look at some of the national numbers, GDP was up over 3%, which is the best in a couple of years. U.S. added 178,000 jobs month over month. Excellent. Unemployment is 4.6%, which is considered full employment. The Fed is obviously confident in the U.S. economy. They bumped interest rates 0.5%, feeling that the economy can handle that and still continue to grow. So there's just a lot of good numbers out there right now nationally. In fact, I've been on your show a number of times over maybe the last decade.
Two decades, I would say.
Two decades, yeah. Ouch. And this is about as good as it's been.
Well, talk a little bit more about the Fed's decision to raise interest rates, Russ, because, you know, we, the four of us, get together once a month and we do these monthly economic shows and we always say, is the Fed going to raise interest rates? And they never end up doing it. How come they decided to do it this time?
I think the basic feeling was that the economy is strong enough now to handle it without tipping into a recession. Job growth is great. Unemployment rate is low. Inflation has risen a little bit. It's not alarming, but it's risen a little bit. So I think the Fed felt that they could handle 0.5% increase now, 0.25% increase now. But more interestingly, maybe they're talking about maybe three more bumps in the year coming. The 0.25% is not a big deal. It's not going to be very disruptive. But if they do raise rates three times next year, that could paint a different picture. The other thing about interest rates, even maybe more importantly, is that the Fed controls short-term rates, but long-term rates have really bumped a lot. And mortgage rates are up by almost 0.75% over the last month. And that's really kind of painful for the housing market. It adds maybe about $100, $125 a month to the typical New Hampshire mortgage. That's over $1,000 a year. So
yeah, over the course of a year, that adds up to
it adds up.
Money.
And the real estate market is very sensitive to interest rates. So that's maybe the biggest impact on for most people.
I want to get Steve and Jeff in on this in terms of, you know, what numbers caught their eyes this month. But last real quick question for you, Russ. New Hampshire has a strong export sector. Do higher interest rates mean a stronger dollar, which would make exports more expensive overseas, or does it mean a weaker dollar, which would make our exports seem more attractive?
Stronger dollar.
Stronger dollar.
Yes.
So good news if you're going to Canada or Europe, but
right,
if you're trying to sell to those places.
Money from other countries, and they have to convert that into dollars, which increases the demand for dollars, and therefore the dollar is stronger when interest rates go up, typically.
So, Jeff, what numbers have you been looking at just this month?
Well, obviously the interest rate is important because, as Russ was saying, you know, New Hampshire is very dependent on its real estate and construction industry, and whatever affects that, and it's really, really sensitive to these interest rates, and that's a big concern. And, you know, I see this in New Hampshire, and I see it nationally. The unemployment rate is very low, but it just seems like it doesn't feel like it's 4.7 or 4.8% nationally, or even 2.7% in New Hampshire, even though we know that there's a great demand for workers, because you just don't get the feeling that everybody is swept up in this economic blizzard or whatever you want to call it. It's not of good news. It doesn't seem to be equitable. You know, I'm not trying to use that in any negative way. It just doesn't seem like it's across the board.
Income inequality.
And I think, yeah, and then that's really what we're talking about, the results of the national election.
Steve, how about you? Economic numbers that are jumping to you.
Consumer spending, and we don't really know yet, but that's two-thirds of the economy. And we'll see, I think, pretty clearly what's coming down the road if folks start spending their money around Christmas time. The unemployment rate, obviously, is an indication of fairly tight labor market and slow population growth for the state. And I'm waiting to see the most recent census estimates of population change to see if we're bringing any new families in with wages increasing and, tight labor markets.
One more thing, Russ?
Yeah, I think going back to Jeff's comment about it doesn't feel as good as the numbers say. And so I think that one of the things that caught my eye this month was a report in the New York Times about some research. And the research basically looked at – it was very interesting. It was a longitudinal study, meaning over time. And it went back to 1940. And in 1940, only 10% of the people aged 30 years old were making less money than their parents. 90% were making more. They did this decade by decade, matching up census figures. Very interesting study. Today, it's 50%. Of the 30-year-olds are making less money than their parents did when their parents were 30 years old. So there's a sense of, I think, the momentum of prosperity that this country has enjoyed for so long during essentially all of my life is fading. And I think that's part of this morale being not as good as the numbers would suggest. Another thing that comes to mind quickly on that point is that in New Hampshire now there's roughly 30,000 people, looking the numbers, matching up percentages with the size of the labor force, 30,000 people that are working part-time for economic reasons. They'd like to be working full-time, but they can't be. And they're probably in the lodging and accommodations industry, in the food service industry. A lot of our economy here in New Hampshire does point towards part-time work for people that would like to be full-time. Yeah. So that's part of it, too. And then one last thing that comes to my mind quickly on this morale thing, the distinction between how people feel and how the economy looks, is housing. Home prices now in New Hampshire are just back to where they were almost 10 years ago. They've just been flat. And for a lot of households, the value of their home is their really major investment, their sense of well-being, and it's just been flat over the last decade. It's nice to be back where we were, but it took us almost 10 years to get back to where home prices were, home values were 10 years ago.
Well, when we jump into Jeff's year-end review, we'll talk a little bit more about the real estate market for sure. Yeah. But Jeff, go ahead.
I just want to say, I don't know any numbers about this, but I do know personally many people who are experiencing this, and I'm sure there are many listeners out there who are experiencing it. It's young people who have graduated college who find a job but can't find a place to live, and they're living at home. You know, maybe they're living in the basement. Maybe they live in the room they grew up in. But they're living at home, and that's across the nation that's happening. And it's not something that I know I remember very much. You know, it was kind of a weird thing if you went home to live with your parents. But now it's very common. And that has definitely have to affect the morale of people who, you know, people who should be – who've gone to college, gotten a degree. And the old story is, you know, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, whatever, you know, you had a degree from college, you get a good job, you have a better job than your parents. That's not the way it is anymore, and I really do believe that does play into it as well, besides the idea of these people working part-time who want to work full-time, which is why we have a lower unemployment rate, but not people who maybe not be particularly satisfied with the way things are going.
Steve, go ahead.
People are as confident as they've been since well before the Great Recession now. There are still people obviously struggling. 23% believe that there's going to be difficult financial times in the next year, but that leaves, you know, three quarters of the folks that believe things are going to be mixed, stable, or better than that. So, and I think what we're experiencing is that we had 5 or 6 years of tepid growth. We have 1 year of really strong growth, and we'll see. Next year, ask me about business confidence. If we see another strong year, then perhaps people start feeling a little bit better.
The exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, it's our special year-end edition of the monthly economic roundup. We're looking at how the economy fared this year in New Hampshire with the new 2016 year in review from the New Hampshire Business Review. A little bit later, we'll get an economic forecast for 2017. Let's hear from you. The exchange number, again, 1-800-892-6477. 6477. How would you rate 2016 from an economic standpoint? And what's your own economic forecast for 2017? You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Jeff Feingold, let's dive into it. What's the key message from this year-end review that you guys did?
Well, as we were saying just a few seconds ago, you know, things look really, really strong in the New Hampshire economy across the board. It's been I haven't seen this in 20 years, Ross. I mean,
really,
it's been a long time where you've seen numbers like this, you know, just across the board. First of all, the unemployment rate, 2.7%, lowest in the country, and it's the lowest it's been since 2001, which is a long time. And it's also at the lowest point. It matches the lowest employment rates of the 1990s when we had a huge boom, economic boom in New Hampshire. That's the big thing. The other thing is that wages are starting to go up, which is also a good thing. We've seen the housing market real estate sales are very, very, very strong. There's even been a big uptick, I think 13% uptick this year in residential construction permits. So that's a big deal. That's a very important thing to get more housing, we can talk about that later. The appears that business profits are very strong. You just have to look at the results of the BPT, the business profits tax revenues, business enterprise tax revenues, as well as rooms and meals tax revenues, which is a big source of the income, which shows how many people are visiting or eating out or staying in New Hampshire, which is important for our tourism economy. That's been very strong. You know, so these numbers are just really pretty, just very impressive across the board. And that's why I feel conflicted what I was saying about before. But if you look at this, and also just by the number, the business people we talk to in all across the board, manufacturers, people in tech, people in hospitality, restaurants, retail, they all seem very confident. But the overriding message from this report, from this story, is really labor. It's workforce. There are businesses just can't find. They say they can't find the people they need, and they're worried about finding people they need, which in the long term does not bode well for the economy. Because if they can't expand, what's their choice? They can go someplace else, or they just don't expand, and you don't create those jobs that we need.
Well, and Steve, let's talk about that. And we've talked about this on this program many times before. Because you're right, Jeff. It's such a key element of what we're seeing here economically. And, you know, Steve, during the election, I'm taking this right from Jeff's report, the cry from the right and the left was jobs, jobs, jobs. And then New Hampshire seems, I'm quoting here, overflowing with them. It's the workers that New Hampshire needs. So are we going to hear, Steve, in the coming year, politicians saying workers, workers, workers? Are we going to switch that?
Well, I think we've heard that for a long time. And I'm not sure people are talking jobs, 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 or just economy, economy, economy. And so whether we're talking about encouraging, I think Governor Alex Nunu said he was going to try and encourage businesses to come to New Hampshire, 100 businesses in the first 100 days. I think a business will have a hard time moving here right now because they'd be concerned that they don't have the workforce to meet their demands. Will that mean a pivot to the question of workforce? I think there's been an incredible focus on workforce for the last 5 years, whether it's STEM or the New Hampshire Business and Education Coalition or Live Free and Start, or, you know, lots and lots of initiatives. And I think that will continue.
Do those initiatives help? I've read about some of these. Do they actually make a noticeable difference?
Yeah, it's hard to associate any big change in the workforce. In fact, when you look at our labor force right now, it declined a little bit and is, you know, anticipated to grow very slowly, if at all, going forward. So did those initiatives stop or create some capacity? Perhaps, but it certainly hasn't stop the movement of away from being, you know, high migration, high education, and a bigger workforce here in New Hampshire.
What do you think, Russ? For so long, we've heard from politicians, again, from both parties, saying we need to bring jobs, we need to bring new businesses. But as Steve points out, if a new business came here, it would have a hard time hiring the right people.
Yeah, it's kind of a dilemma.
Is the rhetoric going to change?
And, you know, we've talked before, well, why aren't wages going up fast enough to pull people into the labor force, to draw people into the state? And I think about it, and part of it is that this very low unemployment rate is relatively new, a relatively new phenomenon, maybe the last 2 years. And so it takes a while for. And I'm wondering, though, also, if you compare, if you look at the figures that Jeff cited and the national figures on inflation being only 1.7%, I'm wondering if firms feel a pressure that I can't raise my prices, but I got to pay more for labor. And maybe I'm wondering if that's kind of holding back wage growth. It's pretty good in New Hampshire, 5-6% versus 1.7% unemployment. So we are seeing wages being bid up, but not quite as fast as you'd expect given a 2.7% unemployment rate, which is phenomenally low.
Yeah. I have to say that, part of this discussion is really about the demographics we've talked about many times on this show. And we're an aging population. So people are aging out of the workforce. And they're choosing not to – they just don't want to work anymore. They don't have to or they can't. So what we really need to be thinking about is how do we make our workforce younger? One way is by just hoping that people have more babies.
That takes a long time to get 21, though.
I know it. But the other thing is, and this is a really important, I heard a very good report by Emily Corwin on public radio just the other day about welcoming immigrants into your state, into your community, because those people, they usually are younger. They very, very often have skills. They're very entrepreneurial. And that's another strategy that other states are talking about. Communities in New Hampshire have been talking about it and been doing it. And that's something that we could do over the long term to help bring the age of our workforce down and bring the skill level up.
Let's go to our listeners. Gentlemen, again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Deborah joins us from Exeter. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to address the unemployment number that you're looking at. I believe that there are multiple categories that they count in unemployment. And while it appears low in New Hampshire, on a national level, it's projected that out of like 324 million Americans, there are 94 million able-bodied workers that aren't working and are not being counted as unemployed, suggesting that 35% of the workforce paying tax dollars is supporting 65% of Americans. And this data is done by a grassroots effort called Jobonomics. So I wonder if your guest could speak to really what this other category of people who are unemployed.
You know, Deborah, this is a really interesting question. And guys, every time we talk about the unemployment rate, we hear from people who question what's really in those numbers. And maybe that's a subject for a future show where we really dig into what's in these numbers and what isn't. So, Deborah, thank you. But, Russ, real quick to you.
One number I saw over the weekend that really shocked me. The labor force has been declining. And the labor force is people that are working or looking for work. That's what Deborah's right. That's what gets factored in. The number that and the labor force age that they look at is 16 to 64. Well, from 16 to 21, 22, they shouldn't be in the labor force, really. They should be going to school. But the number that shocked me was among males aged 24 to 55, 11% are out of the labor force.
I saw that too, and there's some speculation as to why is that.
Yeah.
Are they, do they have pain? And there's a big problem with addiction. And
yeah, I mean, I can understand why the labor force, people might be retiring early at the tail end of the way they calculate it, or they may be staying in school longer. But this is males age 24 to, I think, 55 was the thing. 11% are just not playing the game. They're not on the field. So that was really surprising to me.
I saw that same thing and had the same reaction, Russ. Thank you, Deborah, very much for the call. We'll take more of your calls in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's a special year-end edition of our monthly economic roundup. We're looking at how the New Hampshire economy fared this year, as described by New Hampshire Business Review's end-of-the-year publication. Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. How would you rate 2016 from an economic perspective? And what's your own economic forecast for 2017? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.com. NHPRExchange.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPRExchange. And Jeff, Steve, and Russ, we've been talking a lot about the workforce issues that plague New Hampshire's economy, that threaten these very good numbers that both Russ and Jeff talked about. One last question for you all on this, and then I do want to turn to some of the other stuff in Jeff's year-end report. Steve, to you, what is the incoming Sununu administration or the incoming legislature saying about what they will do to this workforce shortage issue that we've talked so much about?
Well, I think across the board, people have been talking about scholarships for students, lowering debt, keeping students here, trying to create incentives for people to either stay or come back. Beyond that, it's not clear to people, frankly, what we can do to encourage either growth in our in our workforce. What can we do to lower housing costs? That's historically been a comparative advantage for New Hampshire. Difficult question to answer from a legislative perspective. Can we educate our own students better by ensuring low-cost community college? Perhaps that's, a strategy. Are there enterprise zone efforts or smart city efforts that we could undertake as a state to accelerate the growth that's occurring in some of our more urban areas? Those are all questions, I think, that are going to come up in the course of this legislative session.
Well, and you've talked a lot on this program, Steve, about how the cities in New Hampshire, Concord, Nashua, Manchester, Hanover, Portsmouth are doing really well. So take advantage of that growth of the good stuff that's going on there.
That's right. Yep. And I think the Division for Resource and Economic Development had begun to think about strategies for accelerating either through a digital marketing campaign, making New Hampshire it clear to everyone else that this is a place where you not only just live and have a quality of life, but there's, economic opportunity here as well.
Well, and the community college costs have not been going up that much, right? I think they've made a pretty good effort to keep those
both the
low.
University and the community college system have said that they're going to hold tuition steady. And in this, at least the initial budget conversations, both have agreed for a certain amount of money from the state that they would hold that tuition.
All right. We'll be talking about that a lot in the coming year. Early in the year, we'll do our typical legislative roundup where we call in top lawmakers from both House and Senate, from the parties. We will ask them about that. And also, of course, Chris Sununu will be inaugurated early in the year. And so we'll be talking about that as well. Jeff, do you want to jump in?
I just want to jump in on something that Steve was saying, is that really a lot of the potential solutions and the solutions are things that take investment and require money. And, and like a lot of states do where they have these programs where if you're a valedictorian of a high school, you automatically get a full scholarship to university or, some state school. That would take a pretty good investment. But I think that would be a good sign to younger people in the state, like, hey, we want you to stay here.
Right.
Because the numbers have gone over and over again about the number of people, the young people who go out to school out of state, they don't come back, large percentage of them. So, I mean, that's something that the lawmakers are going to have to be thinking about. Do they want to spend this money on this? Because it's going to take that kind of a commitment.
Well, and here's what I wonder, and I don't know if you guys can answer this or not, but, we're not the only state with this demographic problem. Vermont has the same problem. Maine has the same problem. I mean, are there other ideas that those states are doing that New Hampshire could say, ooh, maybe we should do that too?
Laura, not so much what can we do that's different than them, but one of the other numbers that caught my eye in getting ready to come in this morning was that I looked at commuting data, and there are over 100,000 New Hampshire workers that commute to jobs out of state. 100,000. If you add up the number of people working in the state and those working out of the state, that's nearly one out of five. If you look at Rockingham County, it's almost half of their labor force commutes to jobs outside of New Hampshire.
Wow, half. That's a ton.
Yeah, 100,000. Out of a labor force of around 730,000 in the state, 100,000 are leaving the state. I mean, it's got to be because there's better jobs across the border because the commute is a pain in the butt.
Well,
because it's Massachusetts that they're going to.
They are going to Massachusetts. Some to Maine from the Portsmouth Seacoast area, right. But primarily Massachusetts. In fact, I did look at that. 83,000 go to Massachusetts of the 106,000 that go out of state.
So here's the question. So if New Hampshire businesses, I'm looking at you, Steve, if New Hampshire businesses are having such a hard time finding workers, what about these folks? I mean, should they look there first to say, look, you live here already. Why don't you work here?
This has been true since the 80s. I mean, we've always had this level of commute outside, whether it's the folks going from Portsmouth down into Boston or the southern region, Salem. And they made that choice in the 80s and 90s and 2000s to live in a nice place with lower cost housing and commute. The question is, going forward, are we going to see that increase, decrease, or is it going to change at all? Are we going to see more people who start to move north to commute to Boston because housing is so expensive there? Are the millennials going to make a decision to move to the Salem, the communities that are sprouting up, and make that commute?
Jeff, real quick, and then
yeah,
we'll go to some
calls.
That,
you know, that's what led to the original boom in the 80s was the lower housing costs in New Hampshire, and people came up from Massachusetts because they wanted to live in New Hampshire because it's just too expensive in
I remember doing a show a long time ago. Russ was probably on it, called The Mass Migration, and that was what it was all about. All right, lots of people want to jump in. And again, the question we're asking on the show today is, how would you rate 2016 from an economic standpoint? It's our monthly economic review. We're doing a year-end edition of it. Also, what's your own economic forecast for 2017? We'll get Steve Norton to talk about that in a couple minutes. The number for you to join us now is 1-800-892-6477. Or send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. There's Facebook and Twitter. That's NHPR Exchange. And all of you, let's go next to Eric in Conway. Hi, Eric. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm looking a little more forward into the future here, and I'm wondering if your panelists can talk about what's probably going to become a jobless society. I mean, so many jobs are being done by robotics and manufacturing. Even waiters and waitresses are being replaced by tablets at your seat, self-checkouts. I mean, this is only going to become more prevalent, and I wonder if anybody's thinking about how this economy is going to work. Is this keeps going on.
You know, that's really interesting, Eric, and thank you. I don't know if any of you guys want to talk about that. Russ?
Just quickly, he's right. If you look at manufacturing production in the United States, it's really grown very, very rapidly. And, of course, we have fewer manufacturing jobs. So we're producing a lot more stuff now in America, even within manufacturing, with a lot fewer workers. So there's been a lot of talk about jobs lost to China. But I think that there's more and more talk about jobs lost to automation. So he's got a good point. I don't know that it doesn't get to jobless, but it's job fewer.
Well, or it's a different type of job, I think, is more realistic way of expressing it. So, you know, we have huge declines in advanced high-tech manufacturing. We've had very big increases in the number of high-tech jobs. And so, you know, bankers, there was this big disruptive influence. People don't go to banks anymore. You would think the number of bank tellers declined. It actually hasn't. It's actually increased in total. They just don't do the same things
that
they used to
do. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So this question going forward about jobless, I think, really points to a real problem that we face, and that is the world is changing so fast. Jobs are changing so fast. How can people change fast enough to keep pace, hold a good job, and continue to provide, you know, productivity for the economy?
Right. Well, and Russ made the point about manufacturing, and, you know, it seemed 10, 20 years ago that wouldn't happen to the service sector, that, of course, you'd always need a waitress or you'd always need a cashier. But that is turning out not to be so much the case.
I think a lot of lawyers today type their own letters. It used to be that almost every attorney had their own secretary, for example. So you talk about white-collar jobs and the impact of technology in that sector as well. So I know I do most of my own typing now. And when I started in the field, that was something somebody else did.
Well, you know, I know in the newspaper business, when I started, they were typesetters. And that's a job that doesn't exist anymore. And they used to be New York Times would have hundreds of them typing, you know, just setting all the type.
Yeah.
That's, you know, technology has gotten rid of that. But I just want to say something. There is a discussion that's been going on in certain areas. I know there's in Finland, there's an experiment with this universal basic income to just kind of give people an income and, you know, see what happens. You know, if they're going to do an experiment with that. But I think that might have to be a discussion. You know, if there's just not enough jobs for people, what do we do with human beings?
That's a super interesting point that you raise, Eric. And that's the second caller today who's given me a whole idea for another show. I do have to say, you know, every time I go to D.C. for work, there's this one CVS that I go to in D.C. because I always forget something. I always need something. And it's completely automated. Sort of, you know, so if I need something, I have to kind of wander around and maybe I find somebody to help me. The CVS in downtown Concord, I have known those ladies for 20 years. You know, I brought my kids there when they were babies. So there's something, I don't know, there's something that's lost. I always chat with them. How are your kids? How are you doing? You know, it's just a little bit less human.
Yeah, we give up a lot when we get a lot of efficiency. We give up a lot of that warm I mean, if you go into a Lowe's or a Home Depot now, it's very hard to find the people who will. Whereas when I used to go into my little 10,000 square foot hardware store downtown, it was, no, Russ, you know, use this stainless steel screw, not that
you don't pick up
brass
the wrong
one.
Thing. Yeah. Anyway,
you could buy five screws and not worry about finding a pack.
Right. Yeah.
It's a shout out to those ladies at CVS. I miss them when I go into the automated place. Wayne is calling from Dover. Hi, Wayne. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning. My question was our. Topic to present to the panel is when we talk about economic numbers, like we were saying, the unemployment number seems like a great number, but everybody's talking about jobs. I read in a newspaper last week that the current number of employed in New Hampshire is between 734,000 and 735,000. I look at the number of employed. I don't think that number's grown very much in the last 24 months. I don't know what the panel had thoughts on that and how that number stacks up historically.
Well, Wayne, it's a great point. Steve, you want to jump in on that?
Sure. I mean, we've back in 2012, since 2012, we've been growing at about 1%. But we did have a period of actually where the number of people that were employed declined. So,
and that's just because of age.
That's
right?
people aging retiring. Out, people deciding they're not going to participate in the labor force for other reasons.
Yeah, and young people maybe, you know, moving out of New Hampshire.
Yep.
Sure. Okay. Well, Wayne, thank you very much. Russ?
Yeah, but make no mistake, the number of jobs in the state is increasing. I mean, Jeff's figures say 17,000 over the last year, which is a remarkably high number in the last 20 years almost. That's a very high number.
Right.
So we are adding jobs in New Hampshire, and actually we're adding manufacturing jobs. And I looked at the jobs added by are they in sectors that pay below average wages, about average wages, or above average wages? And a third of them now are paying above average wages, are in sectors that are – so our distribution of jobs is getting more favorable to better-paying sectors of the economy.
Well, I want to ask about a couple other numbers that jumped out at me from, again, the Business Review year-end report, Jeff. And one of the things that I saw was home sales this year up 10%. Why is that especially important given the demographics that we're talking about?
First of all, it's important because after the Great Recession, you know, basically we had a real estate depression in this state. And now that means that a lot of that inventory, these houses that were available on the market, it's definitely been eaten up. There's just not as many houses on the market. Now realtors are begging people to sell their houses. So there is this need to – these houses are being exchanged. You know, there are transactions, which means also that it puts some pressure on building new housing, which is sorely needed, especially in terms of affordability. But that's also another story. I'm sure you've done this on your show about the some of the roadblocks and impediments towards building affordable housing in different communities.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
But as I said, historically, real estate and construction have been a very, very important sector to the New Hampshire economy. They've been engines for the economy for as long as I've been here. I've been here for 35 years. And it's very important for that to be a strong sector. When sales are up, that really helps everything across the board because, you know, it has an effect on retail, on taxes, on everything across the board. So it's a good sign home sales are up.
So here's a question, though, for you, Russ. And from what I understand from reading Jeff's report, prices are up. How does that help with this, you know, again, this demographic problem? I mean, if homes are getting more expensive, young people who might want to stay in the state can't afford to buy that first home.
Yeah,
so we always say, yay, housing prices are up, but maybe that's not so great for some people.
Yeah, they're up. It's great for sellers, you know, and not as great for buyers. That's the bottom line.
And the buyers, typically, first-time buyers, are those young folks who we want to stay here.
Right. My biggest concern for housing going forward is this whole impact of higher interest rates, which are already up, as we talked about earlier in the show. And the momentum, if you believe what the Fed says, is for continued increases. What concerns me is people that have variable rate mortgages, people that have home equity loans, are they going to get stressed out by these higher interest rates? And then for the market as a whole, if you look over time and you try to correlate home prices and interest rates, there's a very strong correlation that when interest rates go up, home prices dampen. Maybe not drop, but not go up at the same pace.
So there's a little bit of yin-yang or push-pull there.
And remember, prices now are still only back to where they were 10 years ago, and wages are higher. So housing, in that sense, is more affordable than it was before the recession took hold.
Yeah.
But and then if you look on the rental side, there's a lot of stress on the rental side.
Well, sure. What have we said on this program? Vacancy rates are like 1% or something,
and,
or 2%
in
the rental
under one,
area?
They're under 1%.
So basically there's no place to
there's
rent.
No, there's just no availability. I've been doing some survey work in different communities, and there's basically you call the rental agents and they say, well, I might have a unit available in February. You know, and these are places with 100 units. Yeah. And although home prices are where they were, rental costs are up 20% since 2006. So there's a disparity there.
Steve, go ahead. Any thoughts on what Jeff told us about new construction and how that might help with the demographic problem we're talking about, but also home prices are up and how that might hurt the demographic problem that we're talking
about? Well, I guess the question is, where do people want to live? What
right.
kind of housing stock do we have? And what kind of housing stock is being built? And, you know, right now, millennials don't want three-bedroom, four-bedroom. They want two-bedroom that's fully outfitted, that is Wi-Fi enabled and, you know, it doesn't have the old radiator that cranks in the middle, you know, or in the living room. So do we have the right housing stock? I don't think we do yet. And so while rental rates are low, I think developers, if we continue to see this economic progress, are going to start creating that housing in places outside of Portsmouth, which they are doing, Dover, Rochester, outside of Manchester, in Manchester. Hopefully, at least, that's what will happen.
Well, I saw a story just recently in Manchester about these, I'm not going to use the right word, but
micro
apartments.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
that what they are? Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's that they opened them up in, not far from downtown. And it's been a it's part of this trend that's going around the country. You know, places like New York where, you know, if you get 150 square feet, you know, you have a penthouse. But you know, I have to say that's really important to remember is that so many of the things that are happening in terms of the real estate, in terms of future real estate construction, they are happening around this in the cities and around the cities because that's where people want to live, and that presents another whole issue for other parts of the state, the more rural areas in the state, which are already dragging economically.
Well, a couple emails have come in, gentlemen. This is from Lindsay. She says, "I heard your panelists mention people having more kids to help with the New Hampshire population. Both my husband and I are from out of state, but we moved here for school and were able to find good jobs after we graduated." Wow, Lindsay, that's great. "We would love to start having kids and contribute to the population, but it's daunting to think about from a financial standpoint." Lindsay says the cost of daycare is so expensive, and since we didn't grow up around here, we don't have family to help us out. We make a very good combined income, but still paying for two kids in daycare would be almost as much as our mortgage, let alone pay down our student debt and trying to save for future college tuition. Lindsay says the options we're weighing are moving out of state to be closer to family or having only one child. Wow, Lindsay, what an email. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Well, I know that my wife and I lived that story. We came up here. We didn't have any family. And, we went through some very rough times. We had two kids and having to pay for the daycare. And now I know the cost of daycare are much higher and much more difficult. And, you know, fortunately, we didn't have student loans because, of course, our educations were – you know, pretty much paid for. You know, it wasn't very expensive at the time.
Now,
but now those things are really saddling young people, and this is why the housing market is scary in terms of, you know, are these people going to be able to buy houses eventually?
Okay. Well, Lindsay, we'll talk more about this after a short break. Thank you so much for the email. If you're on the line, stay there because we'll get to you in just a minute. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's a special year-end edition of our monthly economic roundup. And in a minute, we'll get a forecast for 2017. But right now, let's hear from you. How would you grade or rate or rank 2016 from a purely economic standpoint? And also, what's your own economic forecast for the new year? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And gentlemen, just before the break, we were reading an email from Lindsay. So, you know, a heartbreaking story. She moved here. They went to school here, she and her husband. They want to start a family, but they're not close to extended family. So they're going to have to pay for childcare. And she was saying, wow, it's really expensive. I did want to note that when my kids were little, I got a little help through an employer program, right, where you can set aside some pre-tax income. I can't even remember how it works.
Flexible spending account.
You get a little bit of a break there. Not much. But, Steve Norton, I wonder what your thoughts are, too.
So, again, it's all about comparative costs, right? So to provide care for an infant in New Hampshire is a little under $12,000 per year.
Wow.
Seems like a lot. In Massachusetts, it's almost $17,000 per year. So we're expensive, but we're an expensive part of the country, and our competitor states where people might go are even more expensive. So again, this is one of those stories that's a little more complicated than it appears when you talk about child care.
I think, too, you know, there's been sort of a Teutonic shift in what it takes to make it in America. And it used to take one good job when I was growing up. You know, it took one good job, and you could have a house, you could have a car, you could maybe get a color television, you could – with one good job. Now it takes at least pretty good jobs. Yeah. So I think that puts a lot of stress on the whole daycare situation. I have a son who, with a baby, he and his wife, and it's almost more expensive for her to go to work than to stay home with the baby.
Well, Lindsay, good luck to you, and thank you so much for the email. And let's go back to the phones, both of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And William is joining us from Concord. Hi, William. Go ahead.
Hey, I've got all kinds of things I can help you with. One of the fellows was speaking about the people in Maine having the opportunity to graduate high school valedictorian and go to a state school. The problem with that is my son was going through high school and looking at that, and then it switched to a community college. Mm. Now, he did not want that as a college repertoire or whatever, but he decided to go to another college. He stayed there for 1 year in Maine and decided he needed to go to another college. He went to Massachusetts. The college itself offered many, many different ways to keep him there, and he left anyway, and he went to Massachusetts. And after graduating, he stayed there.
Stayed in Massachusetts, William.
Right. And yeah. Now has a wife and new baby. When he was hunting for a home, it was unbelievable.
The cost in Massachusetts.
Oh, it was.
So what's your idea, William? That sounds like a very typical story to the stories that we've heard, but what's your idea?
Well, I don't think that the state spending any money to have people that graduate a valedictorian go to a college to have it paid full board. It's not all full board. You have to pay room and board, books, everything else. So for a person, the family that can't afford all of that, it leaves them back to eating all of the expenses. And not only are their children graduating with debt, the parents are still saddled with debt.
Okay. Well, William, thank you for the phone call. And a couple more emails have come in, guys, that I want to turn to. This is from PJ in New London, your hometown, Jeff. PJ says, I have also seen the male 20 to 54 numbers. You should also mention the female worker numbers for that age group, which have risen. In this day and age, do we still not count the parent who may be providing care for children or parents at home? Do we also factor in our shadow or under the table workers who may or may not pay taxes? PJ says, unlike Germany and some Western countries who have embraced technology, the U.S. laments lost jobs instead of spending the money to embrace new technology. PJ says, a good example is energy. We cry over coal and argue over solar and wind while other countries are retrofitting their government buildings, schools, and businesses. Same with infrastructure, PJ says. So PJ seems to be making two points. The second one, Steve, is on something that you said where we talk about jobs lost to manufacturing, but a lot of those jobs are lost to innovation. PJ seems to be saying, let's embrace that innovation, instead of me saying, I miss those people when I go to automated stores. He seems to be saying, let's just go with it. This is where we're at.
Right. And there are two public policy responses to that. One is you provide individuals with a basic income, which is what Finland has experimenting with, or you do both provide with income and provide a longer term workforce training solution to the problem, because the problem is that the labor force just can't respond quickly enough to the changing nature of the job market. And so when we say technology is bad, it is in the short term. And what we all misunderstood was how long it would take for the workforce to catch up to the changing job market.
Well, the other point he makes is, you know, we talk about these workers, Russ, who aren't in the workforce, and why not? They seem to be of prime working age. He's talking about, you know, do we still count, for example, the mom or dad who might be home providing care for children, or the, you know, sort of middle-aged man or woman. It's usually the woman who's taking time out to take care of an aging parent.
Right. No, they're
unpaid
not in the
caregiving.
They're not in the labor force. They're not working, and they're not looking for work. That's just a delimiter that is used in calculating unemployment and employment rates. And so the fact of the matter is they're not considered part of the labor force, and they're not considered employed. And maybe that's part of the declining labor force participation rate among males. Maybe they're doing something else. Maybe they are staying home doing child care.
And also, as Steve mentioned off air about the high rate of incarceration, especially among black males, that's also part of that phenomenon of people who having this large number of people in a certain age group who aren't working because they're in prison or jail.
And if you look at statistics on Medicare disability, you can go on Social Security disability, excuse me. You can go on Social Security when you're age 62, and you can go on Social Security when you're disabled. And the ranks of the disabled have risen substantially over the last 10, 15 years.
So, okay, that's something.
You know, I don't know if it's that the qualifications may be a little more liberal or whether the health of the workforce is less. But
that's something really to dig into.
I think part of that is that phenomenon is that it seems to be tied to the welfare reform, and a lot of people there's just not enough benefits for welfare. They expire, and then people are kind of almost forced to look for other kind of support that way.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call, gentlemen. Oh, go ahead, Steve. You want to jump in? Okay, we'll go to Patty in Littleton. Go ahead, Patty. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in northern New Hampshire. I wanted to mention 2017 forecast for me looks great, and you wouldn't believe that because my job as a designer moved to southern New Hampshire in December of last year. So obviously it's a sort of a microeconomic climate, and there are different needs in the northern parts of the state, but I have strong marketable skills, and there are minimal opportunities here. But with technology, I've been able to freelance. And subsequently this year, I've opened a studio in Littleton, New Hampshire. So my question would be, have you guys considered the number of people who don't show up in the unemployment numbers, who contract their services nationally and internationally using that technology? I believe there's been a huge increase in the amount of people who work in this way, in a contracting way. And just one last comment having to do with age, I think I'm closing in on 60, and I think that we really need to value the skill level of the workers at this age. And it isn't all about the young workers, because at my age, I feel I'm a great mentor for interns and young people.
Well, the value of experience. Patty, thank you so much. And, you know, it's interesting to hear what she says. Once again, we're getting people, Russ, who say, I'm not sure about those unemployment numbers, you know. But
right.
Freelancers like Patty would be counted.
They are counted. She's working. She's working, so she's counted as employed and as part of the labor force. And this whole remote employment, I know that some of the banks in the state are now utilizing people offline to process mortgages that they might be living in a state with a 6% unemployment rate, and they can process mortgages from their home on remote. So remote employment, it sounds like Patty kind of does that, is a growing phenomenon, and maybe that's another thing that helps ease the stress on our labor force with our 2.7% unemployment. Maybe we can reach out technology to other states and have people work remotely.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who do what Patty does. Thank you so much for the call, Patty. Jeff?
I was just going to say that, you know, that's why it's such an important thing to get that broadband up in the North Country, places like that where there isn't, because it gives people the opportunity to do what Patty's doing, is to live in a place like Littleton if they have that kind of broadband infrastructure. And I know that they just started putting some stuff up there just the last week or so.
Quickly, one of the things I looked at this last week, the median home price in Portsmouth is like $330,000. The median home price in Coos County is $108,000.
So you can get a really nice house.
So we're talking about affordable housing. Just, you know, move your job.
Like Patty did.
Yeah.
So, Steve, she mentioned her economic outlook for 2017 is very good. And, Patty, it's great to hear that. You guys at the Center for Public Policy Studies are also involved with something called the New England Economic Partnership. And you do a forecast every year.
That's correct. And you may remember Dennis DeLay, who did this for 20 years, was the forecast manager for New Hampshire. And this year we're doing this forecast in his honor. And so and he did a heck of a job. We looked at his forecast recently, and he hit it exactly on the
of
nose.
Of course
three
he did.
Years
and we
out.
Miss him.
Yeah,
he
we
died
do.
This year.
So, but we do it for lots of reasons. We do it for the New England Economic Partnership, but we also do it for Ways and Means, the House, the committees that make decisions about how revenues are going to grow, because how the economy goes is really important in understanding what's going to happen with revenues. So, you know, if we look back, we've all been saying it's been a pretty good year, and we look at revenues, tax receipts. We saw the BPT and BET went up almost 15% year over year. Meals and rooms up 14%. Real estate transfer tax up 14%, meals and rooms. So the question that we're all asking ourselves is, will this continue? All right. So we look at lots of different indicators. We look at jobs. We look at growth, change in GDP. We look at personal income. We look at the labor force. And we look at year-to-date estimates. And all of those are beginning to suggest that that acceleration may be slightly declining, that we may see somewhat slower growth than we've seen, say, 15 to 16. And as these guys said, that's the fastest we've grown in a very long time. Is it okay to think that we can sustain that? If we trend out, the economy looks like it's going to grow at 2%, which is above the national average, slower than it's grown in the past, but pretty good. If we were able to get workers here, our models suggest actually that you could accelerate that growth up to 3-3.5% because the labor market is so tight, you have to think that that's a constraint right now.
Yeah, at some point businesses can't expand.
Just can't expand anymore.
They can't find the people.
Exactly right. So, and then you look at things like productivity. Productivity in New Hampshire has been slowly declining as it has been nationally over the last 10 years. That means could we get more capital invested here or technology in the North Country or technology in other places to accelerate that growth? So there's a lot of uncertainty, but I think you can pretty much assume that 2017 is going to be pretty similar to 2016. It's only when you get out into 18 or 19 that you introduce a lot of uncertainty.
What do you guys think? Russ?
There's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of moving parts right now. It's a tough year to do projections with a new administration coming in with radically different policies. So I think the range of possible outcomes has widened.
Because we've got
such a different
big changes in
policy.
Economic philosophy at both the state and national level. Well,
particularly nationally, yeah. I would say.
Who would have predicted the stock market growth that has occurred since November? Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, what Russ is getting to. And when you look at decisions about trade, that could really shift what happens in the economies here in New Hampshire and elsewhere.
If we get a trade war going on, that's difficult for New Hampshire because we have a strong export
sector.
Well,
it's less important for New Hampshire than it is for the country at large. But you have to understand that what happens in the rest of the United States really impacts our economy.
Sure, absolutely.
Just on a consumer level, you won't get $3 for $5 socks anymore if we have a trade war with China or a place. You know, it's like consumer spending could be completely shifted to, you know, downshifted. And that's why it's kind of difficult to predict this, because really, if you think about it, we've had this growth for since 10, and it's pretty extended, and you know it's possible that we could be heading a recession just by the natural scheme of things eventually. But you know, it's hard to say.
It is hard to say, especially given those great economic numbers that you and Russ started out with, and that generally positive forecast that Steve just gave us for the next year.
Right, and I would say again that there's geographic variability in this. And that while I can't remember the woman's name from Littleton, whose outlook is looking
Patty.
Rosy, there are spots in the North Country that are looking rosy, but there are lots of spots that are basically still in recession.
Well, here's an email from Lindsay in Keene, who has her own economic forecast. And thank you so much, Lindsay. She says, my boyfriend graduated from college 2 years ago, has already been laid off, and now working 70 hours per week, two jobs, to have a semi-comfortable lifestyle. I'm graduating in the spring, Lindsay says, and job prospects are not great. It's looking like either two jobs for me or relying on my parents after graduation. We are staying in Keene for a couple years and looking at paying $1,200 plus for a reasonable place to live. She says grad school plans are in the future, though it will be economically very challenging and require us to move elsewhere, out west or south, to afford it. And here's something that we've talked a lot about on this program. Lindsay says marriage and kids are way in the future, primarily for economic reasons. Lindsay says, I know this is the same theme for all our friends. It cannot be good for the economy. how difficult it is to start out. Wow. Lindsay, good luck, and thank you for the email.
She's prototypical, yeah. I think, of the generation.
Yes, as we have been talking about earlier, it's really concerning.
Well, every month on this show, I like to ask you guys, close out by saying what economic numbers are you going to be looking at in the next 3 or 4 weeks before we meet again. And Russ, how about you?
The stock market. Will the Dow hit that 20,000 mark? And interest rates. They're both have been in flux significantly, as Steve pointed out, over the last month. Interest rates up sharply, more than we've seen in a long time. And the stock market up nearly 5% in a month.
Okay, so we'll check on those two numbers when you guys come back. And how about you, Steve? What are you going to be looking at?
Two-thirds of the economy are driven by consumer spending, and this month is a big month for spending.
It's the month.
And then the second piece is census numbers, which are going to come out and say, is New Hampshire's population growing since 2015?
Okay, real interesting. Jeff, how about you?
I've started becoming fascinated with this the price of oil. And I'm interested to see, because that'll have a big effect on New Hampshire in particular, and also the strength of the dollar, and that affects all the other things we've been talking about. So it'll be interesting to see over the next month or so when OPEC's deal with the non-OPEC countries, they're supposedly going to have quotas, and that could bring the price of oil up.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about all those and a lot more in the new year. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Have a very happy holiday.
And Exchange fans, it's almost your last day to vote for your favorite show of the year. Voting closes tomorrow. You can make your choice at our webpage, nhpr.org/exchange, or on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Then you can listen to the winning programs the last week of the year. So again, you've got just a little time left to cast your ballot for your favorite Exchange show at nhpr.org/exchange.